Voices, Oratory, and Radio Steers.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
You are listening to WGXC ICRA, hands-on creative community radio at 90.7 FM and streaming live online at WGXC.org. WGXC is a program division of Wave Farm.
Help your community? You want to get involved, become more active? Perhaps you're already going to your local town meetings and you have a cell phone in your pocket? WGXC is hosting workshops about how to put your town meetings on the radio with your cell phone. Learn how to webcast your local town meetings with your cell phone in your pocket. Anyone with an iPhone or Android can learn to upload audio to the WGXC website, sharing civic and cultural events with your community and getting them played on 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Share your democracy with your neighbors. Bring your phone to attend workshops, Wave Farm Study Center, Saturday, April 15th at 2 p.m., and in Delhi in Delaware County at the Bushel Collective, 6 p.m., Tuesday, April 18th. That's April 15th in Accra and April 18th in Delhi. More workshops coming to a local library near you. Learn how to broadcast your local town meetings with a cell phone in your pocket from WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of WGXC or Waveform.
I like marijuana, you like marijuana, we like marijuana too. Marijuana, 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 marijuana. I like marijuana, but you like marijuana, we like marijuana too. I want to be a hippie. Got to get stoned on marijuana. I want to be a runaway. Got to leave home for marijuana. Remember the teeny bop sniffing airplane glue. Marijuana. He used to freak out in Central Park Zoo. Marijuana. I wanna get high, but I never know why. The cop I got to say goodbye for marijuana. 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 I like marijuana, but you like marijuana. We like marijuana too. I want to be a pusher on the Lower East Side for marijuana. I want to be a pusher, got to get you high on marijuana. It's my life and I do what I want. Marijuana. It's my life and I do what I can't. Marijuana. I want to smoke pot and I want to smoke a lot. But here comes my father, the marijuana cop. For real, for marijuana.
longer the head is, the longer in jail for
marijuana.
I've got book of gold and Panamanian red.
Marijuana.
The bigger the bank account, the higher the head.
Marijuana.
I want to get down and I want to be allowed. But here comes my father, the family is mourning.
Marijuana. 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 Marijuana.
I like marijuana, but you like marijuana. I like marijuana, you like marijuana. I like marijuana, you like marijuana. We like marijuana too.
Hi. That is David Peel and the Lower East Side with I Like Marijuana. And that has been the functional theme song for the Medical Freedom Show with Heather Martin, which you are listening to right now. Got a bit of some sad news last week that David Peel of David Peel and the Lower East Side has sadly passed away. We will remember him as a singer-songwriter and drug activist. He's somebody that I know has played with many people, including certain guests of this radio show. So that is a loss to the musical world. So today we are talking to documentary film producer Bob Shubring. Bob, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, Bob, you're coming through a little bit choppy on the phone, so just try to speak into the receiver as clearly as you can. Well, Bob, thank you for being with us today.
And well, thank you.
You're very welcome. So, Bob, you recently worked on producing and financing a documentary film. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm actually engaged. There are two of the films that we should talk about. About a decade ago, I produced another film. This was John Holdowach's documentary, High, The True Tale of American Marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did that, it was a slightly different world. George W. Bush was in office.
Uh-huh.
I didn't imagine the government could possibly get any worse.
Yep.
Than with him as president.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And surprisingly, I was able to surprise myself with that prediction. We got to see the drug war mutate into a worse form of its original self.
Yes, I like the word mutate that you use, because I hear a lot of people saying that the drug war is ending because of so many places legalizing cannabis, but it's really not ending at all. It's simply mutating, as you say.
Yes, what we observed a decade ago when we shot that film was that there was a problem with the advocates of those who were grossly hostile to any use of any drug for any purpose whatsoever, which was that certain drugs at that time were legal and other drugs were illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And in practice, the prohibitionists were persecuting patients who used the drugs that were already legal.
Right.
Or at that time were legal.
Mm-hmm.
In their view, the world was in a kind of evolution toward the state in which all drugs are illegal all the time for every possible use. And, you know, none of them were really quite brave enough say that out loud.
You know, you bring up a very good point, is that really all drugs are illegal, because you can't even walk into a pharmacy and buy an antibiotic without a prescription that now serves as a legal document allowing you to buy that medicine.
Yeah, exactly. You need a special permission to break the law.
Yeah.
And the people who give out these special permissions are called doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And they have licenses that empower them to grant these special permissions.
I also want to fill in our listeners, too, who might be not as familiar with this subject. But early on, at least in this country, all that was required for someone to go to a pharmacy and buy a pharmaceutical was they had to simply know the Latin name. Because back then, it was assumed that if you could speak Latin, if you could ask for a substance in a Latin name, that you were educated enough to know what you're doing with your own body. And eventually they made that into a kind of legal system, I guess, a law, that it has to be a doctor to write the prescription, not just that a person can simply demonstrate that they are educated and know what they want and go and get it. So I just wanted to fill people in a little bit on that history and the evolution of our prescription system.
You're absolutely right. At one point, there was no regulation of prescription medicine apart from the civil law.
Mm-hmm.
If a person, for example, packaged a substance and called it by a certain Latin name, but in fact the substance was not the stuff that's known by that Latin name, the buyer was free to sue that person.
Right, you should be.
And so their litigation did happen. One of the problems that came up is as the American legal system evolved, was sometimes a so-called quack physician would emerge who would claim to have a drug that cured people and actually was providing a drug that made people sicker.
Mm-hmm. And we still have that happening.
Yes, it still happens.
Yeah, the regulations to prevent that haven't ruled it out.
Yeah, the original goal of the regulation, there was a famous case in Detroit, actually, in which a quack doctor was giving a number of patients a poison called arsenic.
Mm-hmm.
And he got away with it because he used a Latin name for arsenic.
Mm-hmm.
Most understood that arsenic was something they bought at the hardware store and used it to kill insects that were infesting the house.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody understood that arsenic did that. It was poisonous drugs. And what this doctor did was he called the arsenic by a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially tricked people into believing that they were not eating bug poison.
Right. That's why people need to remain educated medical consumers.
You got them to keep paying more money to make them sicker.
Mm-hmm.
And you ended up prosecuting and going to prison for that.
Yeah.
Well, the effect of this confusion was that when people wanted more legal protection from such criminal activity, lawyers came along and invented regulation. The idea was, okay, well, we'll find the people who practice medicine and who are known to do a good job of it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put those people in charge of writing some rules on how it's done, and then we'll give those rules the force of law.
Right.
And so about 100 years ago, states started forming boards of medicine, boards
mm-hmm.
of pharmacy, regulated
mm-hmm.
how medicine and pharmacy would be practiced.
Yeah.
Well, there's a problem that comes up, because at the same time that these laws were getting imposed to limit how the art could be practiced, there also was a thing going on called technology. We were learning new ways to treat static body of knowledge that would continue to be practiced forever. The art would improve over time.
Mm-hmm.
And a problem that we have, a tension that emerged almost immediately, was that if a group of doctors practice old-fashioned medicine, and there's a newer way that's better and safer and more effective to treat the same disease. Mm-hmm. The people who have a newer, better, safer, and more effective way to treat the disease have a burden to meet of persuading all the old-fashioned doctors that their way is worse and our way is better.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about, for example, in
the treatment of epilepsy. There's a substance called cannabis. There's a substance in cannabis called cannabidiol, CBD. And CBD seems to be highly effective at controlling certain types of epileptic seizures mm-hmm. that are not controllable by any other drug that's on the market.
Right.
And so we have the issue of people who need this new medicine to treat epilepsy that used to be untreatable by any other means.
Mm-hmm.
Or by
yeah.
And they need access to this drug. But the people practicing old-fashioned medicine using other drugs that are less effective on those people don't want to learn.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it's old-fashioned medicine, more like, I don't know, corporate medicine or something, where they're in denial of all of the other modalities that are out there to treat, such as the cannabis, as you're talking about.
Well, you raise another interesting point, is the regulatory system actually came to an understanding that there would be a need to change and improve medical procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they arrived at as a way to improve medical procedures and get old-fashioned doctors practicing newfangled medicine
mm-hmm.
is that they developed something called the double-blind test.
The double-blind
test.
Oh, double-blind
test.
The double-blind
test is, mm-hmm. is that we take a person who's sick and actually, we get a collection of people who are sick with the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people we give a placebo, that is a substance that is known to have no effect whatsoever on the sickness.
Uh-huh.
They get a pill or something.
Right, a placebo.
Okay. And the other group of these people, we give the new medicine to.
Mm-hmm.
If the new medicine works significantly better than the sugar pill, then we know that the medicine is effective.
Mm-hmm.
That's how a double-blind test works. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the trick to running a double-blind test is the substance that you use, that you're testing, and the test itself has to be legal. You know, if you're in the process of running this test at, say you're at the University of Texas Medical Center in Galveston, and you're running this test, and in the middle of the test, in walk 12 guys in jack boots and hard hats on their heads and body armor and M16 rifles and menace everybody and haul them all to the hoosegow and call the drug illegal.
Wow.
Well, now we can't run the double-blind test, can we?
Yeah. Is that what happened in Texas?
Because everybody called to the hoosegow and it got stopped.
When did that happen? Sorry, just when? When did that happen?
So far.
Bob?
Well, here's the problem.
What?
It didn't even have to happen. It didn't even have to happen. You know,
so you're saying that the researchers didn't even have access to the cannabis that they were trying to study.
That would happen, and
right.
They wouldn't do the test.
Yeah.
Researchers are mm-hmm. terrified that they're going to get shot if they try to test marijuana in a laboratory.
Yeah, definitely.
It's very important to understand that concept. Researchers
mm-hmm.
are doing jobs in research instead of in soldiering or sailoring or something in the military, because they don't want to be shot.
Yeah.
Especially not by the police.
Mm-hmm. And also that reminds me of when Bush put a stop on any stem cell research in the United States. It really kept us in the dark ages of what is really the new wave of medical technology. It's such, I mean, there's such amazing things they can do with stem cells.
Happening in Singapore, because stem cell research is legal in Singapore.
Uh-huh.
So the work's going to be done there.
So they're coming
30 years,
to...
30 years from now, America will be backward.
Rising
nobody will
to
want to come here to study medicine because all of our doctors will be stupid. They won't be able to teach anybody anything.
Mm-hmm.
The new doctors will all be in Singapore and they'll speak Chinese.
Yep.
We'll have to learn Chinese if we want to get help.
Yeah.
We'll have to go there. We may have to pay for it in Chinese yuan, which will make the dollar kind of useless.
And, you know, you bring up such a good point about the regulations and how these laws have developed, and really what you're talking about when you're thinking of a doctor who's corrupt, let's say, or a drug manufacturer who's corrupt, just applying these blanket laws, this blanket legislation on the whole society is really counterproductive. Because I think really we need to look at these situations on a more individual level and deal with them that way, rather than having these blanket laws that are open to interpretation, that are just so widespread that it really doesn't work with the human condition. We're all human beings. We're all individuals. Every situation is so specific and individual that making blanket rules about medicine really just hurts more people in the long run. And it has throughout our history.
Has to characterize the problem as one of corrupt companies, because the issue is any pharmaceutical company for the last 100 years could have isolated cannabidiol from cannabis plants and experimented on it.
Right.
There may even be, it could be done to modify the cannabidiol and make it more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe attach another substance to it and make it more effective. The pharmaceutical companies cannot do this research because the government has told them you go to jail if you try.
Yeah, exactly. And when we have our government telling us we can't have science, we can't have research, we can't save people's lives, then it's not really working in the benefit of the people. That's for sure.
It's not at all for the benefit of the people. It's for the benefit of the enforcement agencies.
Mm-hmm.
They have a useless, a socially useless function of making other people sick.
Yeah.
They have no legitimate purpose to exist. Therefore, they have to continue to be at war with the American people to justify their own existence.
Mm-hmm.
Those Americans who are gullible enough to believe that these agencies serve a useful purpose are the ones who continue to support it in spite of the fact that it's not only useless, but dangerous.
Yes, absolutely. Now, this reminds me of a certain historical figure that I mention a lot on the show, and that's a certain Dr. Benjamin Rush, who was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And he tried to urge our founding fathers to provide a provision in our country's makeup for medical freedom. He said, just as you're making these provisions for religious freedom, you need to have medical freedom there too, because what's going to happen is this is going to descend into tyranny. I don't have his exact wording, but he said something about it'll be relegated to a certain class, and then it's really not free and available to all people.
At the time that he was doing, that he was speaking from experience.
Mm-hmm.
There was a pastor in Boston named Cotton Mather.
Mm-hmm.
Who read a book and became convinced that smallpox could be prevented by injecting people with tiny amounts of smallpox virus.
Mm-hmm.
The process is called vaccination.
Right, the early vaccines.
Benjamin Franklin was afraid about the concept and wrote a pamphlet against it.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that he circulated.
And that controversy exists today. There's still people who are being helped by vaccines and also people who have been damaged by vaccines.
And so to arrive at a sensible consensus on whether a substance is safe or whether a procedure mm-hmm. is safe, the only way to arrive at this consensus is to actually do the procedure on enough people to find out.
Mm-hmm.
So, morally, is it right to force people to accept the risk of doing a procedure on themselves when they don't trust it or don't have a reason to believe in it?
Mm-hmm.
Of course not.
No.
So we have to have, the Rush was absolutely correct, there has to be medical freedom
yep.
so that people are willing to take mm-hmm. the risk.
And I'm sure a lot of people would have volunteered for that because smallpox is a terrifying disease at the time. There's certainly no need to even force people to be part of something that they are doing against their will.
Precisely. So the analogy I like to make about this is, you know, what would happen if you tried to milk a cow? But the only tool you had for that you thought would milk, you used to milk the cow, was a screwdriver.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to milk the cow.
I've yet to see anybody who milked a cow with a screwdriver successfully.
They'd have to settle for steak.
They might, yes. But, on the other hand, has anybody ever been successful at hanging drywall with a milking machine?
It's the wrong tool for the job.
The wrong tool for the job.
Mm-hmm.
So when we come to making medical decisions about for people, the most useless tool possible is a tool that creates fear.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is using threats of violence.
Mm-hmm. And force.
Yes.
Right.
Using force against people destroys the capacity to think,
mm-hmm.
destroys the capacity to learn.
Yeah, and the current displacement of power in our medical system, I think it really keeps patients and doctors on an uneven ground. Whereas if we had more medical freedom and people could go to the doctor and be seen as first the expert in their own body, and be treated as a colleague and not some kind of underling, it would just be a better dynamic for communication and collaboration and building a plan for real healing.
Absolutely. It's going to be necessary in the future, because it's already necessary now and has been in the past. So it will continue to be necessary in the future that we have this dynamic in which the doctor is someone we come to with questions.
Mm-hmm.
And when the doctor has answers that make sense, we get those answers. Or when the doctor doesn't know the answer, we get a truthful answer out of the doctor that says, I don't know the answer. Let's look into that some more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it should be. We need to really change the way we interact with medicine, where right now it's like a hierarchy. You've got this expertocracy of doctors and everyone else who's kind of under the system of rule. I just don't think it should have hierarchy and rule being a part of our medical decisions. Also,
exactly.
I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to WGXC Acra. We're on the air at 90.7 FM on your radio dial. also streaming live around the world from www.wavefarm.org. That's wave as in the ocean waves and farm as where animals are raised. .org. You are listening to the Medical Freedom Show with Heather Martin. We broadcast every second Monday of the month from 2 to 3 p.m. I am today talking with documentary film producer Bob Shubring, who is my guest via phone. And Bob is the film producer of a documentary called High, which examines our drug laws and our culture regarding marijuana. So, Bob, we'll get back to what you're talking about here. So tell us a little bit more about High and what got you started on that project.
Well, what got me started on that project was that I'd been active in
You there, Bob? Did we lose you? Uh-oh. Oh, dear. I think we lost Bob. Well, we're going to take care of this little technical problem. I'm going to put you on some music for a minute. I'm going to listen to the AMA song by Phil Oakes. Here we go.
Hello? Hello, hello?
Okay, trying to play the song. Let's see if we can go. All right, the song is not working. So my station manager is coming in here for help. He's on the phone now. Okay, he's. I'm trying to play some music.
For the time when we get together, we say, hooray for the AMA. And for us doctors, let's have higher pay. If you can't afford my bill, don't you tell me that you're ill, cause that's the free enterprise way. We've divided up the sections of the body. Every day we specialize more and more. But we really love to stitch the diseases of the rich. We are sure there is a clinic for the poor. Hooray for the AMA. And for us doctors, let's have higher pay. If you can't afford my bill, don't you tell me that you're ill, cause that's the free enterprise way. And our waiting rooms are getting pretty crowded. It is sad to see our patients sit and bleed. But if you must use our ointment, then you must have an appointment, or who'll pay for those magazines you read? Hooray for the AMA. And for us doctors, let's have higher pay. If you can't afford my bill, don't you tell me that you're ill, cause that's the free enterprise way. And now the government is getting too ambitious. Yes, we know they want to socialize us all. Well, our oath was Hippocratic, but with money we're fanatics, so we'll see you in Canada in the fall. Hooray for the AMA. And for us doctors, let's have higher pay. If you can't afford my bill, don't you tell me that you're ill, cause that's the free enterprise way. Amalgamated AMA.
Hello, this is Heather Martin again. So that was Phil Oakes with the AMA song. We are still trying to reconnect with our guests today, so I think we'll put on a little bit more music, and I'm going to play a song for you now that's from a person who's going to be our guest in May. He's a YouTuber extraordinaire and makes a lot of films about pain patients, so we're going to play the DEA song by Ken McCam. Here it goes.
My friend Kimmy has CRPS, and so does Joey. It's quite a mess.
There's Molly with her lupus, too. It's so much worse than any flu. Amber has ulcerative colitis, and Mary's got interstitial cystitis. Fibromyalgia for poor Julie, and cluster headaches for yours truly. So many chronic conditions pain opioids can relieve. But on that subject, the DEA just refuses to agree.
It's the DEA. They know what's best for you, no doubt. As much as you might scream and shout, they just don't listen anyway. The DEA must get their expertise from Reddit. Who the hell would give them credit for anything they have to say?
There's syringomyelia and myelomalacia, for when your spine's up to no good. And then there's stiff person syndrome, yes, where you think your limbs are made of wood. Pulmonary fibrosis attacks your lungs, so breathing's not an easy thing. Crohn's disease inflames your bowels with all the pain that can bring. Peripheral neuropathy feels like you're always walking on Legos. Trigeminal neuralgia feels like someone cut your face open with stilettos. So many kinds of chronic pain are helped by taking opioids. But you tell that to the DEA and they just get really annoyed.
It's the DEA. They know what's best for you, no doubt. As much as you might scream and shout, they just don't listen anyway. The DEA must get their expertise from Reddit. Who the hell would give them credit for anything they have to say? The DEA, they treat your pain like it don't matter. They really wish we'd cut the chatter and quietly just fade away. The DEA, they know so much more than your doctor. No matter how you scream and holler, they wanna take your meds away.
The CDC says that more than 23,000 people die every year because of bacterial infections that are resistant to all of our antibiotics. That's a lot more than supposedly overdose on opioids every year, and potentially much more deadly, like Spanish flu deadly, if we don't stop prescribing antibiotics like Skittles. But no, instead of addressing that, let's focus our attention on restricting access to the very pain medication that gives chronically ill people enough hope to decide to live one more day. Yeah, that's a great idea. Idiots.
It's the DEA. What's best for you, no doubt. As much as you might scream and shout, they just don't listen anyway. The DEA must get their expertise from Reddit. Who the hell would give them credit for anything they have to say? The DEA, they treat your pain like it don't matter. They really wish we'd cut the chatter and quietly just fade away. The DEA, they know so much more than your doctor. No matter how you scream and holler, they wanna take your pain meds away.
Ken McKim, he's going to be our guest for May. So I think we have Bob Shubring back on the line. Are you there, Bob?
Bob Shubring, back here, yes.
Okay, excellent. We're interviewing Bob Shubring today. He's a documentary film producer. We just got disconnected, but we're back on the line. Welcome back, Bob.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry about that.
We were talking about filmmaking.
Yes, we were.
I thought I'd mention we've got another film in the works.
Oh, what's that?
The new project that's underway is called Pandemic of Denial.
Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Pandemic of Denial is based on the fact that when we do statistical surveys of people, we find that about one person in three will develop chronic pain at some time during their life.
Mm-hmm.
Just for 2 months or more.
Mm-hmm.
Without resolving.
So one person out of three could develop chronic pain. Uh-huh.
Affects one person in three.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's 100 million Americans, approximately.
Mm-hmm.
100 million American voters are at risk of developing chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
Every office holder and office seeker who wants to take our medicine away from us is at risk of alienating 100 million voters.
Mm-hmm.
That's an enormous burden upon the prohibitionist lobby.
And I think they're doing a lot of it through measures
that they take are motivated by trying to overcome that.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, of course, they have a large campaign about all of this fear about opiate abuse and people overdosing. They never talk about the fact that the street drugs that people are getting have no quality control, that people using these drugs really don't have a way to moderate their dosage level, and that the prohibition itself creates a lot of the dangers that people who are using street drugs are encountering. I mean, when we had alcohol...
On top of that, there are approximately 100,000 or so people who've, at any given time, are in the addict population, are addicted to hardcore drugs.
I think that's kind of a misnomer when people talk about, you know, when you say hardcore drugs. Like, what are hardcore drugs? Because...
Anything somebody wants to define them as.
That's the problem. Yeah. So heroin used to be cough syrup for children. And now we're considering it a hardcore drug, mainly because of how we as a society are viewing it. What's that?
At one time, heroin was thought to be less addictive than opium.
Yeah, than morphine, too. Yeah. But these are just medicines from pharmacopoeia that have been driven underground, and now they call them hard drugs, like cocaine, which is the extract from leaves that have been chewed by natives in high altitudes to deal with their altitudes. This is something that has extensive medical value, but has been driven underground by that war on drugs. Because there really is like a war machine. There's something that is profiting on having substances remain illegal to the population, particularly substances that people are going to want and need very much, that people are going to be willing to go out of their way for. I think that's really what they're counting on.
Interestingly, when wars are fought, people get wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And wounded people have pain.
Yeah.
People in pain need help.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the key elements of strategic planning for war is that to fight war, there must be a means available to relieve the pain of the people who get wounded.
Well, tell that to the VA, who's taken a no-opioids policy, and they want to take any control away from the patients regarding their dosage, like implanting pumps in their body simply to take away their dosage control.
Uh-huh. Well, that was a believable policy for the last administration, because some of its members actually believed that they could outlaw war.
Well,
of course, it's never going to happen again. We won't need volunteers to serve in the military.
Well, that's a better idea, I think, outlawing war.
Yeah, there's a way of doing it.
If we're going to outlaw something. Wow.
It requires force. And the only way to outlaw war is to use enough force to prevent war from happening, which itself is an act of war,
mm-hmm.
or at least the threat of an act of war. So... What's basically absurd about the VA's policy here is that the VA is sending a message to young people today: don't enlist in the military, because if you enlist and we send you off to fight and you get injured, we will do our level best to hide from the fact that you got wounded defending us,
mm-hmm.
and we won't give you any care. We will give you a kick in the teeth and a lot of insults.
Well, when the Veterans Administration decided to, quote-unquote, crack down on opiates is when you had that sudden increase in veteran suicides. So the mainstream media would report on the veteran suicides, but only attribute them to PTSD and psychological disorders instead of noting that, hey, millions of people just got told that they're not getting any more pain medicine and they're in chronic pain from war. But that's something that's completely glossed over by the mainstream media, but we definitely talk about it a lot here on my show.
Making matters worse is that we, at the same time that that was happening, we also saw a serious disinformation, dissembly, and outright lying campaign that tried to blame the suicides on the presence of trace quantities of opioids in the dead people's bodies.
Right, and not taking into consideration that people who are in chronic pain, who just get their prescription, their full bottle of pain medicine, and are told, hey, this is your last prescription now, you're just going to have to go through withdrawals after this and be in pain for the rest of your life. Guess what they do?
Yeah, they take the whole bottle with a bottle of whiskey and drop dead.
Yeah, because their life has just been taken away from them with that medicine.
But the brilliance of the deceptive strategy here was that the mainstream media are being told and are dutifully reporting that the drug that's rescuing these people from being in pain is the cause of their suicides. Therefore, every suicide leads to a further tightening of the supply of pain medicine, thereby inducing more and more and more people to commit suicide.
And that's what's happening.
The suicide is increasing faster and faster and more horribly.
And some of them are not even intentional.
They're met with the lie that says that, oh, your suicide was caused because you tried to treat your pain.
Right.
Not because you failed to treat your pain.
Right, they're putting the blame back on the patient, but what's a person going to do? What are they going to do? They're in chronic pain. Some people are going to go out on the street and buy heroin because they know that heroin is simply pain medicine that's been driven underground. However, when they're buying it on the street, they don't have quality control. They don't know if the amount, the proportion, the milligrams that they're getting is really what they think that they're getting. They're taking on an incredible risk.
And you see what they're doing on the street has been adulterated. The Mexican crime cartels that now control the import business ever since 9/11 adulterate the drugs they have on the street with large amounts of fentanyl. Fentanyl is a synthetic drug that has a very profound effect on the breathing mechanism.
And I know
fentanyl, you stop breathing and die.
Yeah, and I know from firsthand, from dealing with someone going through that system, that the VA was pushing fentanyl because, again, it was not a patient-controlled dosing system. They put a patch on their skin,
sure,
and then it stays there X amount of hours. It's not like a pill where a person could say, well, I'm feeling a little better, I don't have to take the pill now. You know, that they want to take away the control from the patient and act like, well, no human being outside of a doctor could be educated and can use opiates sensibly. And if we're going to treat all people like that, well, we've got a major problem. I think we really need a society for adults and where people can grow up and take responsibility for themselves, unless we're just going to remain forever children.
Well, getting back to the thrust here, the big problem with illegal trafficked fentanyl coming in from Mexico is that the drug can be manufactured from cheap industrial petrochemicals.
Uh-huh.
It's a substance that you use to make the tires on your car.
It's not really opiates, because opiates are supposed to come from a flower, from the sap of a flower. In fact, it's very natural medicine.
Yes. The point is, the raw materials used to make fentanyl are used for so very, very many legal, necessary purposes. Making bullets for deadly, for example.
Yep.
They're used for so very many legal and necessary purposes, it would be impossible for the DEA to pursue regulations or laws that would prohibit their manufacture. So when an illicit fentanyl mill sets up in business, it's buying substances that have to stay legal, and it's turning them into illegal fentanyl. So 100% of the profit from that operation stays right within the four walls of that illicit fentanyl plant. When an illicit drug dealer buys cocaine, he has to pay a farmer in South America to illegally grow coca leaf, illegally chop it up, and send it to someone who illegally processes it and recovers the cocaine. Then someone has to illegally smuggle the cocaine into Mexico for delivery to the U.S., which will also be illegal. At each step, corrupt office holders and corrupt public officials are paid bribes to look the other way while these crimes happen.
Well, personally, I don't see anything criminal in that other than people saying that that's a crime. People should be able to sell their product to all the people who might benefit from it around the world. What's that?
What I'm driving at here is that because there is a law that when you read the law says it's illegal to do this, the people who enforce the law get to make money by charging bribes to the people who want to violate the law.
So the more ridiculous laws about everyday things, the more there is to make money off of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so getting back to the thrust here, the reason we have a fentanyl crisis in America is that illegal fentanyl is being illegally made in Mexico because the crime cartels make more money if they adulterate the smuggled-in cocaine or the smuggled-in heroin with the synthetic fentanyl that they illegally make.
Yep. And it's
because the illegal money is concentrated in a few hands, the public officials who get paid off with the bribe money are able to collect more bribe money.
I think they have a lot of nerve even calling it fentanyl. I think they have a lot of nerve even calling that fentanyl because it has no opiate in it really at all. Because the real opium comes from the poppy flower. And it's a sap. It's a natural medicine. A lot of times I hear people talking about
fentanyl an opioid.
What's that?
We're actually trying to say that somebody has a nerve calling fentanyl an opioid.
Well, it can be.
Your quote when you're doing this is a recording that you'll come out saying that you have a lot of nerve calling the fentanyl.
Well, I'm saying something that's not even derived from opiates. If it doesn't have any of the sap of that flower, they're just synthesizing something out of petrochemicals. You know, that's not even the same medicine. So, Bob, we're in, we've only got five more minutes to the show. So I just want to go over so you've produced, how many films have you produced?
Well, those two, I've got a couple of others that are on more fun topics. Did one with the late Ocher Mashbat, called Twist, which was about a Mongolian contortion coach. I've got several other projects in the pipeline.
Okay, so you're an all-around film producer, but you've worked on several medical documentaries. So your medical documentaries are High and Pandemic of Denial.
Pandemic of Denial, yeah. Look for that.
And that's coming out soon, right?
That will be coming out soon. We're going to be shooting later this year.
Oh, great. Do you have a release date set?
Not yet, but feel free to bother me about it, and I'll let you know.
Oh, yeah. Keep sending me stuff. I can put it on the Medical Freedom Radio Show Facebook page. Yes, we do have a Facebook page for the show. And so is there a website for Pandemic of Denial where people could get more information about that movie coming out?
Well, I tell you what, a good address to go to is givepainavoice.org.
Givepainavoice.org. Okay, yes, that is givepainavoice.org. This is all one word, give pain a voice.
Yes.
And is that website...
We're all the words together into one.
Uh-huh. Is that website just about that movie or about the predicament of pain patients in a more general sense?
Both. My colleague, Tina Petrova, who's going to be working with me on the film, she's herself a chronic pain patient.
Uh-huh.
She was working in the film trade and... had an auto mishap in which the car went rolling several hundred feet down a hill in New Mexico.
Oh.
Messed her back up, and it's been bothering her, and she's been having problems with it recently. She's one of the people who is intolerant of the drug tetrahydrocannabinol.
Hmm.
She's Canadian. It's going to be totally legal there to get it, but that doesn't do her any good because if she uses anything, it's going to have to be purified CBD that has all the THC taken out.
Hmm. Well, that sounds like an interesting subject, and maybe we might bring you and her back for a future show. Bob, it's been a pleasure.
I certainly hope so, as soon as she's feeling better.
It's been a pleasure talking to you today. We're going to have to wrap up. We're at the end. So that we've been talking to Bob Shubring, who's a documentary film producer and an activist for the cause of medical freedom and for the rights of people in pain to get their pain medicine. Bob, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to play out with Bob Marley, Get Up and Stand Up. Here we go.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.